You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 20 of What's That From? A podcast exploring musicals we don't know, but probably should. I'm Kate.
And I'm Josh. And today we have a special guest with us, Mr. Brian J. Markham.
Hello there. How are you?
Woohoo! Welcome, Brian. We're so excited to have you. Oh my gosh. So today we're discussing The Boy from Oz, the 2003 Broadway Hugh Jackman classic. And Brian was actually in the cast.
I was. I was in the cast and I did the workshop prior to.
Oh, awesome.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a great show. I loved it. I had a great time. Hugh Jackman and I are best friends now. Not really.
Actually, just got off the phone with them.
We just did have a, during this pandemic this year, we did have a reunion, a Boy from Oz reunion, and we were all there and got to meet up again and see, with you and see all of us and
check in
with everyone.
Would you tell our listeners a little bit about
great.
Yourself?
It was great.
Just to have a good understanding of who you are.
Oh, sure. Yeah, so I know you two from Syracuse University, where I used to teach as the associate professor of musical theater in the dance department for 4 years. And then I also I left that position to come here, where I'm the artistic director of Music Theater Wichita. So I'm in Kansas. And prior to that, I had, you know, I've taught at three different universities. And then I also, prior to jumping into academia, I was a dancer in New York, and I did six Broadway shows, and I was the associate choreographer of Elf the Musical with Casey Nicolaw, and I lived in New York for like 15 years after I graduated from Oklahoma City University with a dance degree, and, you know, so now I've kind of transitioned to another, you know, out of the performing into directing and choreographing, and now the artistic director, and yeah, that's kind of my gig. Yeah, my family and I moved here in June, right in time to do nothing. So now we're working on creating the season as we're coming out of this pandemic. I just was talking with someone else saying we're coming out of this as a tattered butterfly, but we're definitely coming out of the cocoon. So it's exciting. So. Yeah. So, and, you know, Boy from Oz was one of those six shows that I did in New York, and it was, on a whole, the experience of it was probably my favorite, experience of any show I did in New York. I was just the other day, I had taken my daughter to dance class, and I was waiting to pick her up, and I was listening to the, soundtrack, because I just love the music, and I loved celebrating, the life of Peter Allen every night, and Hugh Jackman was just the biggest star and the most giving, and of course, Stephanie J. Block was fantastic, and Isabel Keating as Judy Garland was just unbelievable, and it was just a great moment, and it's one of those shows, it's one of the only shows, honestly, that I can almost remember exactly where I was during the entire, like as the soundtrack is playing, I can put myself in the dressing room or I can be standing off stage watching what's happening on stage. And, you know, it's a beautiful story of this man. And But it's somewhat, there's a lot of tragedy in his life too, but he was just so hopeful and so positive throughout all of it. And I, you know, there are moments where I just would just weep because it was so sad, but the music was so poignant, and it was also, you know, kind of weeping for what we've lost over this past year too. And, you know, I think about, you know, I was able to do this. And there were people, you know, I have students who were in, you know, like Moulin Rouge or, you know, or in Mormon or anything that were, you know, they were stopped and they're not able to do what they want to do, on a nightly basis because of this pandemic and how sad and that must be for them not to be able to go to that show every night and do what they were doing. You know, and so I think I just, all of that hit me at one time, and I was just sitting in the car. I don't know what the other parents were thinking. They're like, what's wrong with this guy next to me? He's just crying. But it was
I guess I've never thought about that, like, and, listening
but
to
a great memory too,
a cast recording of a show that you were in. Must be like a wild experience.
Yeah. It's also cool that when it comes on Sirius XM radio and I'm like, oh, listen, I'm singing on that. I'm like,
oh,
that's
me.
I mean, I barely can hear myself. I'm like, I'm in there somewhere, but it's usually, you know, Stephanie J. Block singing, and I'm like behind it going, Liza, Liza, or whatever. But but yeah, it was a great, great time, you know. And you know, we did the workshop for, I don't know, I can't even remember. It was so long ago, but I think like 2 months maybe, and it was mostly a lot of the same people. It wasn't Stephanie, wasn't Liza Minnelli, and. It was Ruthie Hinchel, who was great too. She was a great person from London. but anyway, I'm just kind of taking over, but I'll let you ask me questions.
Well,
because I could just talk.
We have a fun little thing we like to do every week where we try to describe the plot of the show in 30 seconds. So, if you'd be so willing, we would love to challenge you. To describe the plot of The Boy from Oz in 30 seconds.
Yep.
Whenever you're ready.
Okay, so, and go. So, the show is about Peter Allen, who is this Australian songwriter, who also was discovered by Judy Garland and ended up, and Judy introduced him to her daughter, Liza Minnelli. They ended up getting married. He ended up being gay, and they split up, and then the show chronicles his life through all of this and meeting his partner, and then eventually his partner dies, and, you know, and we go back into his childhood, and we hear about how his
30 seconds
life, how his life was altered by his,
that was really, that was maybe
parents.
One of the best 30 second podcasts.
It was all, that was also tragic.
That was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
I was like, whoa, you're really, like, giving us everyone. That was great.
Right, right. It was, yeah. I mean, it really is just the story of his life. And he was such a huge personality. And he had, you know, there were so many great people in his life that you're like, wow. Like, Judy Garland found him, and he had this act called the Allen Brothers, but the other guy wasn't his real brother. And they were discovered in a bar in China, and she found them. They were opening, there was some nightclub or some little club somewhere, and she asked him to be her opening act. And then, you know, then he did. And then he met Liza, and then he moved to the States and, like, really started working as a songwriter on his own. He wrote these amazing songs in the 70s. You know, like I Go to Rio and I Honestly Love You. That was, Olivia Newton-John. I mean, Carol Bayer Sager was a big songwriter with him, and, you know, all these great songs that were written, and, they were all those were all the songs, all of his songs were what made up the show. And it was great. It just really started as him as a child, because he's from Australia, as an Australian young boy, like dancing in these little bars. And and then it moved on through his life, where he sold out shows at Radio City Music Hall. And, you know, he was very flamboyant and very, but lived his life out loud before it was fashionable. And everyone was telling him, you got to stop using your hands so much. You got to put your hands in your pockets. And one of the best parts of the show show is that his manager, who was played by this big guy, big New York character actor, Michael Maharin, who is, you've seen him in everything, and he's just a great guy, was saying, you got to put your hands in your pockets and be as, you know, straight as you can. And then all of a sudden, he jumps up on the piano and takes his Hawaiian shirt, which became his kind of signature, and untucks it and unbuttons it just a little, and then ties it like a halter top. And then he's like, if my hands are going to do, my hands are going to do. And he runs out on stage and does his show. And, you know, people loved him for being him. And, you know, I think that was also what was so great about celebrating this man who was 100% just him. And he loved Liza Minnelli and he loved his partner. And, you know, it was just a great celebration of this man who lived to make everyone happy, you know. And Hugh Jackman, who is like, I don't know if it's the Australian way of life, but he was just, he would do anything. He was fearless, and there was a lot of breaking the fourth wall, and nothing threw him. Like, people would say anything to him, and he would ask him questions and banter it back and forth. And you can see a lot of it if you watch, like, the Tonys when he was the host in the show, and he and Sarah Jessica Parker have a moment, but there's a whole bunch of time. He just would talk back and forth, and nothing threw him. And, you know, even in rehearsals, he would try anything.
That's awesome.
And we went through many incarnations of a few numbers, and he would be like, sure, let's try whatever. And he was always the first one. He was always the first one there at rehearsal. He and Joy McNeely would have their own private little, like, yoga sessions to kind of limber him up. And, like, it was just a great, great experience. And the whole cast.
It's so nice to hear,
so,
like,
fun and
celebrities like that are hard workers, yeah, too, you know?
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Oh my gosh. Like, I've never met anyone who worked as hard and was so deserving of all of his, everything that he's gotten. I remember him saying once that, you know, early on, I mean, he had done a few Wolverines, but this was his first Broadway show. And, you know, I don't think he was totally had bought into his fame yet, because he, you know, he said, like, I'll look at my wife, Deb, who is a lovely person as well, while they're sitting on their plane or a plane by themselves, and go like, woohoo, we can't believe that they're there. And, you know, he is just like a normal person, and was down, you know, so going up to the dressing room, it was, you know, you came on the stage door and you went one flight up and his dressing room was there, and then you went one more up and it was Liza or Stephanie and the female leads, and then you went one flight up and it was some of the male leads, and then our dressing room, and, you know, you would get stopped, he would call you into his dressing room to talk and to see how your day was. And I was like, okay, I got to go because I got to show. I mean, you got to show to you too, and you're the leader. But I, you know, but he was always so, he was always just so concerned with everyone else. And just like, again, like the nicest guy. And it really goes to show you that there's no reason why people shouldn't be that way. Like, there's no, we're all here pretending to be different people. I mean, there's like, you know, it's like, And it's musical theater, so you should, and it's comedy and fun, and everyone should just, we should, yeah, is it hard work? Absolutely. And do you have to be focused and diligent at what you do and pay attention and be respectful and all that stuff? Absolutely. But it should be fun. And there shouldn't be a fear-based situation where you're like scared to see someone. Cause I've been in those situations too, where you're like hiding in the wings because someone's going to scream at you because they might see you from stage and they might distract them. And you're like, come on.
Yeah.
Gypsy.
But that, like, this show just like oozes fun yeah. to me. Like, the, yeah. even just listening yeah. to the album, I was like, oh my gosh. Like, it just made me want to, like, dance around.
Oh my God. It was great. And honestly, it was, there were only four male dancers in the show. And the same four of us that, well, no, I said the four, there were four of us who did the workshop and there were four of us in the show and three of us from the workshop went on and did the show, and one chose to do another show and, he's fine. He's continuing to work. He's just fine. Yeah, and it was some of the hardest dancing I've ever done. Joey McNeely was the choreographer, and he was a protege of Jerome Robbins.
That's crazy.
Jerome Robbins Broadway, when he was like 16 or something crazy like that. And, you know, he had the four of us doing the craziest stuff. I mean, there was this one number, that number that I was talking about where Hugh gets on the piano. It's called Sure Thing Baby. And we're pushing this piano around the stage and there's these scenes that would happen in different parts of the stage. And then we would push the piano to like stage left and he would sing something and say something. And then we'd get a pop, pop, and we bust out for these like four or five or six or seven eighths of music where it was like just crazy dancing and we were busting out, but you know, we were dancing and loving it, like double turn to attitude to a knee roll to the floor and like, and right on the edge of the stage, you're like, please, I don't want to fall on the pit. But again, and we're killing it. Like, we're busting our butts and loving it because we're like, we're dancers and we're dancing. Like, this was some of the best Broadway dancing in New York that year, you know, a lot. I mean, it was tough. And, but then you also realize, like, while we're doing and busting yeah. our butts, doing that, Hugh Jackman is like changing his shirt or something on the piano. No one's watching us at all because Hugh Jackman just took his shirt off or something. So, but again, you know, it was so much fun, and the show, the music was fun, but it did turn. I mean, there were some moments where it got. I mean, like I say, it gets really poignant where, you know, he and Liza realize that they're not going to be together anymore. Or, you know, right after we did, and she's at that moment, she sings this really beautiful song called "I'd Rather Leave While I'm in Love," and it's just, you know, it's Stephanie J. Block, so the interpretation of it is just, I mean, to stand and watch all of these people every night on off the wings was like a masterclass every single night, and just great human beings and great performances and great just greatness. And there was a number right after we did Liza, She Loves to Hear the Music, the big like Liza Minnelli number that's a takeoff from Liza with a Z. We did this triple turn, and all the dancers, we do triple turn and then we fall to the floor and like an X on the ground. And then Liza is the only one standing in light. And then at the end of that, you know, the applause comes and then Hugh walks in and, cause it's in a rehearsal situation, and he says, I have something to tell you. And that's when he delivers the news that, Judy has passed away. And so then he goes to the piano and sings this beautiful song, Quiet Please. And so Quiet Please is a lady on stage, and it's like an in memoriam kind of thing, and it's beautiful. And in the halfway through it, look, I'm getting chills and I might start crying. Halfway through it, this Judy Garland, Isabel Keating, who is a better Judy Garland than Judy Garland, walks out of stage left and downstage in this beautiful white costume, and it's like watching Judy Garland's ghost come on stage. And it was one of the most powerful moments of theater I think I've ever watched. And I would not miss it any night. I would just stay there and like look, peer out of the curtain, as we had to sing some offstage vocals at that moment. And I watched that every night and be like, oh my God. And again, every night I would just cry because it was one of those moments where you're like, this beautiful icon of a human, of a entertainer has passed away. And he wrote this beautiful song, and whether he wrote it for her, I have no idea, but the way it was honed into this show was just so beautiful. And what a, another yeah, tribute to another legend, you know? Yeah. So it was, I mean, it was a lot of fun, but then it was a lot of poignant moments too, you know? And at the end, when he talks about, you know, he was like, and you know, he died of AIDS as well. And so, Hugh referenced that at the end of the show. And then he sings this song saying he would do it all over again. Everything he did, he was like, I met all these great people and I've had these ups and these downs and, you know, and, but I would do it all again. Yeah, it was just a great show.
And I think it's interesting too that you bring up the Judy Garland moment, because I was reading that the show happened in Australia before they brought it to New York.
Yeah.
And that they amplified the Liza Minnelli, Judy Garland characters because obviously American audiences know about them more. Yeah. Do you, in the workshop, were they like working on that, or was that already kind of in place before you joined the show?
They had already done that in the writing of the show. In Australia, Peter Allen is such a huge national symbol there that they knew him. And the show there was like more like a concert, like big, over the top, more like his Radio City show, I think, where it was just like him on stage and then a bunch of dancers around. And I'm not sure there was a Judy, or I don't know if there was a Judy or Liza in that at all. But in coming, bringing it to New York, they wanted to, of course, tell that story more and make it more theatrical and less concerty. And, so in the workshop, that stuff was already there. And like his mother figure was there, was played by Beth Fowler, who was a goddess as well. And, and so that was a big part of the show too. So it became a much more of a less of a it. I mean, it still kind of was a glorified one man show. It's definitely the characters around him had a huge parts in that as well. But it became much more of a book musical than it was, I think, in Australia. It is a star vehicle too. And, you know, we knew that the show was only going to last a year because, you know, he had some movie obligations to do. And what we also had were these great, during the run, these Hughcations, because we knew that he would be gone on whatever day to go do a movie or something for 2 days. And so we would have built into the schedule these added days off. So we call them Hughcations. So he had a standby and he had some understudies, but you know, who, and they were great people, but again, it was Hugh Jackman in The Boy from Oz. So that when it's over the title, that's a lot, you know, box office has to, you know, and you don't want to be in the, you don't want to be there when someone goes, and tonight Hugh Jackman will be played by whoever it is. And boo. And then you might have to give the audience their money back, because if it's over the title, there's some stipulation in that, that you have to give some money back if they ask for it or whatever. So we had these built-in Hughcations, and it was great. Now, being part of the workshop, you also got some money for being in the show, because that was something that doesn't happen much anymore. Now they have those $100, where everyone gets $100, but this was a true, like, Broadway workshop, and we got some royalties over, and so we knew every week the people who had been in the workshop, we'd get our check, and we'd get our extra little check. Which most time it was an extra little check.
I know. I saw where it recouped its.
We knew the show was going to sell out, and so it was pretty much sold out every night. So, like that. I mean, honestly, once the word was out, I think just because it was Hugh Jackman too, it was like the tickets were sold, and you know, we were the first show ever to make $1 million on. Raise $1 million for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS, in one thing like Gypsy of the Year, or that it was in that 1 6-week period. I mean, it was crazy. The people that everyone came to see the show, and during that time, I think I told you, I'm sure, while I was teaching you, and the first thing, it was in October, and we auctioned off pumpkins. That he signed pumpkins, like real pumpkins that he signed for like, you know, $2,000 or something. I'm like, they're going to disintegrate in like 3 weeks. But then we would sell his t-shirt, or we would sell his t-shirts that he signed, and they would go for 15,000-20,000. And one night, like, I think it was Billy Joel and John Travolta in the house, and the three of them came on stage and said, if you'll pay $500, you can have a picture with us.
That's crazy.
Line wrapped around the theater. I mean, I was on the top of my staircase in my pineapple hat with my very low cut V, roughly sleeved shirt, going, I have you want to pay a chorus boy's rent for a month? No one did it. But it was great. I mean, again, it was like one of those one of a lifetime, once in a lifetime kind of things. It was really great.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, what was your favorite song to perform in the show?
I would have to say probably the, the Sure Thing Baby, which was that boy's number. I mean, even though it killed me, and I think honestly it was like the reason I had to have back surgery for some sciatica, but it was just so much fun. I mean, we really were dancing our butts off, and it was just a great number. And of course, Liza, you know, that number too, like, she loves to hear the music. I have to retract that. She loves to hear the music. It's probably my favorite number. I mean, when I really think about it, I love that number so much. And to be next to Stephanie J. Block and to have that reaction at the end of it when we would all again fall into the darkness and she was there, and then everyone, like, the whole place erupted, and she was just great too. And it was fun. That was a great number. And then there was this big number at the end called I Go to Rio, which was the big finale, and it started with the boys coming out and dancing, and we had a costume change in the middle of it, and there was a big white piano staircase that came down that we all kind of traversed down out of heaven, kind of.
There's a really good video of it, of promotional footage on YouTube, and you're like right in the middle of it with like a big kick.
Oh yeah, that's me.
It looks great.
It was fun. It was, I mean, again, the dancing was so much fun. And I can remember, like, it was yesterday, that audition. Like, I had already done the workshop, and then we had to go in and audition for the show again. Oh, I'm lying. This was for the workshop. But I did, that was true. I did have to go in and audition, and I remember coming out of the audition, and Joey pulled the four of us around together to over the set, and she's like, "What's wrong with you four? You look terrible." And we were like, "That wasn't very nice of you." He gave us all the job. But anyway, but for the audition, for the workshop, I remember we auditioned on a stage of a Broadway house. I'm not sure which one it was. And everyone was there. Like, I can remember everyone. Like, I can remember Andy Blankenbuehler being in the wings. I can remember, like, some of my best friends that are, like, big old people who wanted to be in the show and were dancing. And I remember doing some turn, like, I'm doing it out there doing it in groups of four, doing the combination, and I fell out of a double turn somewhere, and it's, you know, it all is like slow motion, and I see my friend Eric Scotto in the wings, and he sees me fall out of the turn at the same time, like slow motion again. I can, like, trying to get back into whatever I'm supposed to be doing. I see that Joey is looking down at something at the moment, and I'm like, ooh, and again, it's all slow motion, but in my brain, I'm like, oh, he didn't see it, keep going. And so,
nice.
and you know, and again, to be able to, it's one of those moments that I'm like, you know, that you're, by the grace of God, you got the job. And, you know, I worked my butt off. But again, there were so many people who wanted to be in that show. And for for whatever reason, I was one of the four chosen ones. And I thank God that I was. So, yeah. But
awesome.
It was so many great memories. So many.
Did you know that Stephanie J. Block was going to become like the star that she was?
I didn't. I mean, I knew that she had already done Elphaba and done that, been in that kind of land. And then it kind of went awry for her. And this was, I think, prior to her even going into the New York show. I can't even remember if she had been in New York yet. It hadn't opened yet. Because I got the gypsy robe at The Boy from Oz, and then we opened, and Wicked opened right after us. Oh. So she had not gone back into the Broadway show yet. And, so that kind of was a thing that was kind of, you know, a not so happy moment for her, I think. But she got to be in this, you know, this was show with Hugh, and it was a huge deal. And, I had never met her before, but my wife Jennifer had seen her before. When Jennifer worked in Branson, Stephanie had been in a production of Will Rogers Follies, Aziz's favorite, and knew her and thought she was just hung the moon. She thought she was the most talented person, one of the most talented people she knew. Of course, you know, you're looking at her like she's a star. She did have the hardest role too, I think, in that, you know, Peter Allen was dead and Judy Garland was dead. And then Liza Minnelli was still alive. And you're trying to do this honest portrayal of someone who is larger than life, but you don't, and that every drag queen has done as well, but you don't want to go that way. You can't go that way, but you have to put. So, you know, I think Stephanie did a fantastic job of putting Stephanie and Liza on that stage. But I think, you know, because Isabel was such a great representation of Judy Garland, that, you know, to have Stephanie there as Liza too, which is impossible to do an impersonation. And we didn't want to do a impersonation. We do the essence of, that, you know, it was a hard thing for her to pull off as well as she did. I mean, she was brilliant. And, again, like to listen to her sing those songs is just spectacular. And every now and then, like, there was one time where I was walking down the streets of New York after I'd moved away, and I was walking down, and I was on my way, I think, to see maybe Cher show, and she's on the Jumbotron in as Elphaba up on in Times Square, and I just called and left her a message or sent her a text or something and said, I just have to point out, because you live in your world all the time and you're a big old megastar at the moment, that for us peons, it's amazing that you are up here on this billboard as this major icon. You've done this major icon, and right now you're playing a major icon. And, you know, I was like, and for my, and this was when I was teaching. I may have been at SU, and I was. And I was like, to the students, you are a musical theater superhero. Like, you are. It's like what you do. You change people just by recording a song and they can hear you sing it or whatever. It's like you are a superhero. And I think for a lot of people who go about their daily lives as stars like that, and they just live in that New York world, it's hard for them to realize that you're like, we're like, oh, yeah, you're a superhero.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But she's just great people. They all were great people. Great people. I love them all. I'd go back and do it all again too. My hips would hurt more.
Would you ever in the future like think about directing or choreographing a production of The Boy from Oz?
It's funny because I was talking to Wayne here, the managing director, and I said I would love to do like a kind of a retrospective of the shows that I've done in New York sometime. And I've seen I've only seen one production of Boy from Oz done outside of New York, and it was with a great guy who works here at MTW and who I did the out of town tries of my first Broadway show and did 42nd Street with him. David Elder played him, and he did a great job. It is a massive show to do for one person to learn. Try to do an Australian accent if that's the production that they choose to do in Australia with that Australian accent. And it's a lot of material, and it is like a star vehicle. But I do definitely think it's worth doing. I think it's a great story to tell of someone who's, again, so hopeful and lovely, and the music is great, and the costumes are great, and the costumes in that production, which was at Stages St. Louis, were done by a great guy, Brad. What's his name? Falling out of my head. He was a Fosse guy. He went to OCU. But it just a great, I mean, his beautiful costumes, these big, like, I mean, we had them too, these big, like, showgirl costumes out of, like, Vegas-y costumes. I mean, I would definitely love it. I would definitely direct it somewhere. Here. At this theater, Music Theater Wichita, mtwichita.org.
Shameless plug. Yeah. Shameless plug.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like because of its like Australian following, I feel like it's had like a big Australian life.
Yeah.
Like I know
yeah.
after it was on Broadway, it did that like mega arena like
yeah. They went
Kenny
back
Ortega
there
to tour.
Yeah, which was another thing. I think it turned into more of a concerty kind of feel again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but it's the music is so great, and yeah, he was just a great person. How we celebrated him, he was a great person. So yeah, I loved it. I have lots
have
of great
like
stories
a favorite... Yeah, I was gonna say, do you have like any stories like come to mind that you haven't said?
Oh my god, yeah. So there was this one time, it was a guy named Ramon Flowers who had replaced one of the dancers, and we were doing that big finale. And we wore these, bell-bottom white pants and these Hawaiian, white and silver Hawaiian shirts that kind of hung out. They weren't tucked in. They were just Hawaiian shirts. And we were doing this number and we were twirling and jumping and turning, and his mic pack, the silver pack, that's like the biggest, it's as big as a cigarette pack, fell out and unraveled. And he is still dancing his butt off. And I don't know if he didn't know it or not, but that thing and the cords on those are long, and it is flying around. And the other three of us are trying not to get hit by it, but trying to still do what we're doing. But it is, I mean, it was hilarious watching us like still do the thing. But again, it was like a big like helicopter just moving around him. How he didn't know it was not, it had come out from under his shirt. So it was just like, but still attached to his head. I think you'd think like it would just be pulling so much right. on his head that you would that mic tape was holding on.
The sound people were probably freaking out.
Yeah. Oh my God, it was hilarious. So that was one thing, and you know there was also you know when you're doing a show and you're putting a show together, there was a number that we did called Continental American, which took place in Studio 54, which was a huge thing back then, and you know a club. And we went through so many incarnations of that number. In the workshop, we did one that, and it was, there was two famous people who would come to Studio 54 that were, I think they were just called Black and White. And it was a guy who wore a black crushed velvet cat suit. And his partner, the girl, was, she wore a white crushed velvet cat suit. And that was their thing. And that was me and Jennifer Savelli, who is this brilliant dancer out of New York, I think she's still in New York. And, so in the workshop, I was downstage center and they, you know, it was sex, drugs and rock and roll, baby. And I was downstage center on all fours and she was riding me with a riding crop. And so that was the first version that we started. And I think that's actually maybe in the workshop, that's the way it ended up. And there was a whole thing with, Shannon Lewis, who was another brilliant Fosse dancer. She was in the workshop as well. And she was Lady D and Lady Drugs. And she came out of the piano and Hugh as Peter like followed her around. It was when they were just showing how he got enticed into this drug culture, this world a little bit and how the times were in the '70s and. Eventually, we did about 17 million different versions of that number. I can remember trying like version 75 on stage before we were opening, and where I was underneath the piano, the grand piano, and someone was on top of me writhing around, and you know, it was all these different incarnations that finally they all got cut and went into the apartment of Peter Allen, and they were having a party, a smaller party where there was drugs and drinking and all this stuff, but it was more about the singing and less about a big production. And it's one of my favorite songs to listen to on the recording because it's so 1970s sounding with that saxophone and the vocals. I've told this to, there's a guy in the show named Brad Anderson who just sings this one line and I listen to it over and over and I'm like, thank God that the recording exists just so I can hear you sing that, your two lines, because it's just so brilliant. But yeah, like how the show came to be, like that was the whole thing was just so much fun watching how it ebbed and flowed and how the director worked with different people too. And it was putting it together was a learning experience, like how all of it came together and how it changed from the workshop and how some people were asked to come from the workshop and you saw like why some people weren't and why some people were. And, you know, all of it was just, it was one of the best moments. Yeah. We were there. Do you remember when the big blackout happened? Like half the United States blacked out from like Ohio over. That yes. was while we were, that's while we were in rehearsal for Bork Maz, and we were up in, on the new 42nd Street studios up on right above Times Square on 42nd Street. And the lights went out and we were like, what's going on? We just kept rehearsing and we looked down and I saw, like, I was like, look at the intersection of Broadway. Broadway and 42nd Street was like a mess. It was like ants everywhere, like cars trying to get through and people, you know, and we didn't know what was going on. And all of a sudden we got the word that, oh, there's a blackout and everything is shut down. There's no subways. There are no buses. Port Authority is closed. And so they were like, rehearsal's done. You have to go home. And there was no way. I lived in a house in New Jersey. Oh. And so I had to, there were no buses. And, so I started walking up the, uptown and everyone's out on the street walking and it was hot and we're all passing. And I passed, oh my God, why is everyone's, why are names, oh, Anyway, I passed this really creepy dude, songwriter person that you would know if I could remember his name, but my brain is not working at the moment. Anyway, but I passed all these, so I just walked up the West Side Highway and finally was able to get in touch with my wife, who was able to drive in and find me wherever I was on the West Side Highway and pick me up. And we made a U-turn, and then some girl was on the side of the street saying, I need to get to New Jersey. And we picked her up and put her in the car. And we took her across the George Washington Bridge and dropped her off in Teaneck somewhere. And then we went on home. And it was one of those moments that you're like, what do you do?
Yeah, well.
And but one of those crazy memories that you're like, wow. Bob Dylan, that's who it was. Oh. I passed Bob Dylan on the street,
wow.
And you were like, and he was like, just walking in his wheel. And I was like, oh wow. It was like Armageddon or something was happening.
Wow. Yeah, I can't
just like all this stream of people, and then there comes Bob Dylan past you. And I was like, what's going on?
You're like, what?
Yeah.
Wow. He's in the blackout too?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Crazy times. Crazy, crazy times. But it was, again, yeah, a great memory of a great time, a great people.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It just, yeah, the music, listening to it, watching videos of it, hearing you talk about it, I'm so envious. I wish I could, like, transport myself to 2003, go see it, go see the show, because it just looks great.
Yeah, it's so funny, too, because I hear people say, like, oh, I saw you in Boy from Oz. I loved that show for, you know, so long. And, you know, a lot of people had said, you know, the show wasn't, it was a one-man vehicle, and it really wouldn't have been good if it hadn't been for Hugh Jackman. And a lot of that is correct. I mean, he was so great, but... I think it is kind of a show that can stand on its own, but it does need a star. And when we knew that we were closing, they started bringing in people to maybe replace him. And finally they were like, you know what? We've had such a great run, and it's been such a thing that we don't need to bring in someone who, you know, we should just end it and go on our separate ways. And so that's what they ended up doing. I ended up actually leaving the show 2 weeks before the show was done because I knew the show was ending, and I had left that. I had left 42nd Street to go to that, to come to that show. And then when I knew it was ending and 42nd Street had an opening, they were like, would you come back? And I was hoping that I was able to do some kind of like double duty-ness, and it didn't work out. So I left Boy from Oz for the last 2 weeks. But, up until that, I'd been there the whole time, and it was just great. Just great. One of the best times of my entire life. And when we had that reunion, within this past year, just to see everyone's face. And I'm on, you know, social media. It's so good for that, because all of those people are still working, and a lot of them have transitioned to other things, and doing, you know, similar to me, you know, at different theaters around the country. And then a lot of people are still kicking it and dancing their butts off and singing their butts off and Tony winning and all that stuff.
That's
yeah.
Awesome.
Well, Hugh Jackman won the Tony for Boy from Oz.
Yeah, he did. He did. He won the Tony for Boy from Oz. And, you know, and now he's getting ready for The Music Man. And yeah, he's just brilliant. I mean, again, I cannot say enough great things about him. He's just a wonderful human being. So yeah, great.
It's awesome. Well, we won't keep you for too much longer, but we want to thank you so much for joining us and sharing these great stories. And it just sounds overall like an incredible experience and a great show.
It was. Thank you for having me and let me ramble on.
Oh, of course. I want to hear all the stories.
Yes.
Well, have me back. Have me back five more times. I got five more shows I could tell you about.
Part two.
Great. Part two.
All right.
Yeah,
thanks, guys.
If you don't think we're going to share those YouTube videos of you in The Boy from Oz on our Instagram,
that's when I had dark hair, too. I look at those and I'm like, oh, my God, I had dark hair then. Now it's white.
I plan to like circle your face and be like, Brian Markham, yeah, this is him. Look, right there, he's standing next to Stephanie J. Block.
I know, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys. This has been great. Congratulations on this, too. It's awesome.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. And everyone, be sure to check out us on Instagram. Our Instagram is at WTF_BWay. That's WTF_BWAY. Post updates every Monday and new episodes every Wednesday.
We'll see you next week.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.